Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jade Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. I was supposed to have a game this week, but it fell off. But I'm hopefully going to be playing this weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, we have a local store, Etten Games, that is open for play, and they've removed basically half the play space to give lots of social distancing. And me and the local guys have been talking, and we're like, yeah, we're all going to be wearing masks, and we're all fine with that. So
nice.
I think it'll be good. I'm really excited.
Well, if you managed to not catch it when your wife had it, you're evidently like super resistant.
See, that's an assumption, though. I might have had it before she had it.
True.
I don't believe there's a possibility that, like...
Seems really tough.
It's, yeah, I don't believe that I didn't have it. I think, honestly, I caught it when I was running to get groceries, and then I gave it to my family.
Right.
So, at least, you know, I don't know, right? And then there's the, well, do I have antibodies? Are they gonna actually help me? And who knows? Someone told me I should go get antibody tested, but we don't even know if there's a benefit yet, and it just seems like more chances for me to waste my time and potentially get infected, so.
From what I've read, it does look like there is a benefit, you just don't know for how long or et cetera, but.
Listeners, don't take my medical advice.
Yeah, right?
I am only qualified to talk about comic books and teach fourth grade grammar. That's it.
Well, this is supposed to be day 4 of my birthday trip to Hawaii.
How's it going?
Instead, I'm here in Idaho, and I told myself, okay, you know, it is what it is, try to make the best of it, etc. Brian asked me what I wanted to do. I was like, oh, let's just, you know, try to walk the green belts a bunch on my birthday, etc. And I looked on the forecast for my birthday coming up, and it's currently forecast to snow on my birthday, and I just want to die.
That's awful, man. I'm sorry.
So, I will... try to keep positive in the face of
all this mess.
Yeah. But I did got to play a game this week. Played Cap, Hulk, and Thor on Gamma Shelters. And I'm gonna be, I think, preaching to the choir, to you on this, most likely, Greg.
Yep.
But it is, I guess one thing I want to throw out there is it feels like for people who are trying to play this game competitively that there's a lot of people who are super obsessed with Gamma Shelters right now. And like I get that there are reasons why that's the case, but both competitively and for fun, like from a competitive standpoint, if you're so focused in on one scenario that you don't know how to play the other scenarios as well, that's kind of a drawback for you competitively. And then, like, just from a fun standpoint, like, Gamma Shelters is a fun scenario, don't get me wrong, but if all you're eating is a diet of Gamma Shelters, then you're not having a well-balanced meal plan, and... you're not going to have as much fun, in my opinion. But
yeah,
it kind of what triggered that with me was there was like a conversation going on, and someone was basically like boggling at the idea that someone would not have not consider playing Gamma Shelters, and like it's going to be okay. You can you can go without taking Gamma Shelters in your roster or etc. So
yeah, I don't like Gamma Shelters as much as a lot of other people, but I do consider the fact that like you got to be ready to go against it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I don't know. I really like the other three scenarios so much that I find myself going against Gamma Wave because I know my opponents have more practice on it.
Right, yeah.
And I mix it up a lot more, so.
Sure, wacky like that.
I am wacky. I also love Spider Infected, so. Like,
you do.
What do I know?
We don't know yet. At this point, they've finally started doing some teases on Web Warriors and Miles and Gwen, etc. But given what we've seen so far with Spider-Man and Venom, etc., like you have to kind of assume that it's going to be a very movement shenanigan type faction, and it like right now. Wakanda on Gamma Shelters pushing people off, etc., is a really popular strategy, and you know it kind of makes me wonder if Wakanda will get like kind of unseated in that type of play. And it'll be interesting to see how the game develops and shifts.
Yeah.
One I guess real quick, one other thing that I thought was pretty interesting from discussions that we saw today was basically just kind of how quickly some characters that people had considered best in the game kind of like cycle through on people's perspective changing on it. So for example, Zemo was a really early contender that people loved and thought was one of the best in the game, and now it's difficult for a lot of people to find a spot for him in the roster. And then Shuri was another example of that happening where people are like, oh my gosh, Shuri, she's so amazing, and now there's a lot of rosters where she's struggling to get in. And so I actually think that's really exciting, and I'm happy to see that happening with the game.
Yeah, it's been, like, it's really fun. It's nice that nothing has become so entrenched. And, like, I still think Zemo and Shuri are
They're still good. Fantastic, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. And like, I think if you're running Cabal, Zemo is way more usable. If you're running Wakanda, Shuri is almost auto-include, in my opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really nice to see things shift around.
Especially, some of the gaming experiences that we've had in other systems, there have been some situations where there can be some strong or even potentially bordering on oppressive models that mm-hmm. are just kind of dominant in the meta for literally years.
Yeah.
And so, to see, I guess kind of the group think of what the best model is just kind of shift so rapidly, I think is something that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, no, it's really, and I think it's partly because of how the game works, where every model is usable in every list, and then the idea of like new affiliations come out with new leaders and new tactic cards. I really like it. I love it, really. It's so great that, you know, like a new tactic card might come out that makes, I don't know, Dr. Octopus amazing, right? And all of a sudden, a lot of people who sleep on him will be like, oh, wow, maybe Doc Ock with Wakanda would be an even better choice. I think I'm really excited to see what they do, like, as the game keeps rolling and we start to get... Like, right now, I feel like a lot of people are just waiting for their favorite characters in some ways,
yeah.
but the people who are just, like, buying everything and playing with stuff, nothing is... Like, every month seems to have a new favorite thing to try out. And I don't think anything has supplanted anything else. Like, Zemo is still great. There is no better version of Zemo, right? Shuri is still great. There is no better version of Shuri. Nothing has been, like, replaced with just a power creep version.
Maybe the closest would be Valkyrie with Zemo, but he does do some things that she doesn't, and vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main similarity is that they're both 3 points with charge offensive characters. But, right. You know, I would argue that Zemo throws out bleed and has his reroll shenanigans, while Valkyrie has throws and she's more offensively focused. Which, you know, in a lot of cases, you're right. Valkyrie is going to be people's first choice over Zemo. But, you know, and the opposite hasn't happened either. I don't think there's any releases that have come out where people are just like, oh, well, that's like a worse version. That's not even worth using in any lists. Everyone is finding a place, right? That's really nice.
Yeah, I would agree. Just overall, it's, I've been really impressed with what the designers have been doing with the game. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of stuff that I'm excited about. So like I'm super stoked to see what, you know, like Doctor Strange looked like, or Thanos, or you know, etc. Well, let's dive in and start talking about the actual topic of today, and that is one Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah. So I'm gonna break down the card real quick. Rocket Raccoon is a weirder character. He only has 3 stamina on both sides, so he has a total of 6 stamina, which is really bad. He's a medium move. He's size 1, so he's the only size 1 character in the game so far. He's threat 2, which ties him with lowest threat. His physical defense is 2, his energy defense is 2, his mystic defense is 3. So he's kind of burdened right away with low health and not great defense. His 2 attacks are really good. They're both energy at range 5. The first one is his plasma rifle. After it's resolved, he gains power equal to damage. And it's 5 strength and 0 cost. So he's got a range 5 energy strike that gains power. His second attack is the powerful one. It's, again, range 5. It's 7 strength. And then it's 4 cost. And it's got a really cool wild effect. Vortex, before damage is dealt, other enemy characters within 2 of the target suffer 1 damage and are pushed towards the target character short. So it's like a gravity well on the target. It's really cool. He has 3 superpowers. One of them is called Booby Traps, and it costs 3, and it's a reactive superpower. It says, when an enemy character ends a movement within 3 of him, this character may use it, and you roll 4 dice, and then the enemy suffers 1 damage for each crit and wild rolled. So this is almost like the way that Counter-Strike works, where you just roll these dice and they suffer that many damage. Mm-hmm. I really love these abilities because you can like hotshot and deal 2 damage or 3 damage and knock a character out that's attacking him. Except Booby Traps is cool because it's just if you advance within 3 of him. His second ability is probably one of his strongest abilities. It's Personal Bodyguard. It costs 0. And it says, when he's the target of an attack and an allied Groot is within 1 of him, you can use it, and Groot becomes the target of the attack regardless of range and line of sight. So basically, as long as you have Groot within 1 inch, Groot can take all of the attacks targeting Rocket. And his final superpower is Small Stature, and it just says, this character always benefits from cover. So there have been a lot of people questioning this last one. Normal cover rules are from terrain, and there's the 3 requirements, right? That you have to be 1 inch from the terrain, that a line has to go over the terrain, and that the enemy model has to be more than range 2 away from the target for you to get cover. And this ignores all 3 of those restrictions because you're not getting it from terrain. So you just always get 1 block in your defense roll, pretty much. And it doesn't matter. Like, an enemy character can be base to base. An enemy character can, you know, Rocket can be out in the open, standing next to an enemy. He's still going to get covered.
Yeah, and that's one thing that is spelled out quite explicitly in kind of the, I'm not sure if it was the rules addendum or FAQ or something like that, but
I think it was an FAQ that they just updated.
Yeah.
Because that was a question a lot of people had some concerns or confusion about.
Right. So, I just love Rocket. Like, you look at his card, and it's this raccoon packing around a huge gun.
You know, I think my favorite thing about him is when you flip into the injured side, and, like, his gun has blown up, and he's holding this, like, broken gun, and he just looks like he's gonna punch you.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. His injured side is probably my favorite injured art.
I guess we'll get to this, shortly, but, like, I like the art on, for Rocket on this card versus the art that is for him in the comic book arc that we did.
Mm-hmm.
The art that they did in the comic book art just seemed really weird in my opinion, but.
Really? Okay. Cause he's kind of soft looking.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll get to that. But okay. But I do like the art on his card a lot.
Yeah.
So, what do you think of Rocket?
So, at first glance, I think his survivability is really bad. He only has 3 stamina on each side, which means any decent sized attack is gonna one shot him. I think my first look at him made me feel like you have to take Groot with him to use personal bodyguard to keep him alive. In all my games where I've played against or with Rocket, the strategy is you just throw Groot into Rocket, and Rocket mm-hmm. dies. It's very easy to get him, and like having him have to stay 1 inch from Groot doesn't necessarily feel like a strength. It feels a little difficult. However, and I will say this, I stopped playing him with Groot, and I started just hiding him behind terrain, and I found him a lot more useful. Yeah. So to go over this, right, Rocket Raccoon is size 1, which means if he's on the other side of a car, you cannot target him. However, every other character is a size 2, so he can see everyone over the car.
Right.
And that is where I'm coming from. What I like to do with Rocket is I put him behind a size 2 or 3 terrain, and I shoot the crap out of I just stand still. Like, hopefully I can stand by an objective or with a crisis, but I really think with Rocket, you want to be behind terrain. And then I will say, he's still, like, your enemy will still just come up and throw that piece of terrain at Rocket, and then he's gonna have to dodge 3 damage. But I really do think that that's the ideal strategy, and then it's like, okay, you got me. But I usually get a good amount of attacks off, and it's well worth making you send someone with a throw after him, or, like, you know, making someone go around to target him. I think if you have to send someone with throws after Rocket, it's fine. Like, you've gotten his points back. And then he's dazed, and when he's injured, I'll do the same thing. I'll move him to get behind terrain so that I can keep on shooting every turn. I think it's worth talking about his tactic card, his signature one as well.
Okay.
So his signature tactic card is Deadly Duo.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires Rocket Raccoon and Groot to be within 2 of each other. And it says, Rocket Raccoon may immediately perform up to 3 plasma rifle attacks. Each attack must target a different enemy character. It's a really cool ability because it lets you make 3 plasma rifle attacks, and then you should be ready to shoot 2 Hadron Enforcer shots as well, because you'll power yourself up. So I think the only reason that you want to take Rocket with Groot is if you want to do Deadly Duo. I don't love the personal bodyguard ability as much.
Yeah, so it makes me a little bit sad that you're kind of right and that this is the case, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I guess, where we are with things, basically, where you do kind of want to have, like, just thematically, it's cool, and the bodyguard thing is cool to have these guys together, but then, in reality, you're just better off, kind of like you said, having Rocket going off doing his own thing. Maybe he goes and gets an extract token, and you know, is shooting things from a bazillion distance away, and at 2 points, that's a pretty good value, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I am glad that there are more two-cost characters coming out. I think between Black Widow, Rocket, and Nebula, there's all three of those do some pretty different things, and each of them feel like it's kind of valuable. And so that's something that I think is cool as well.
Yeah, he's not a perfect character, right? Like, he obviously has these huge downsides, which is his survivability. But I think the fact that he's size one and he can hide behind size two and shoot everybody is really cool. I really like it a lot. And I love how different he is from other size two, or from other threat twos, yeah. And I think you're right. Like, all the different roles of the two costers are really interesting. And whereas, like, Nebula feels like the two coster that you throw at someone like a torpedo, he's the one that, you know, grabs a point and just hides with it while he shoots anyone who he can.
Yeah, I think so.
He's my favorite character to kill Venom.
Like, that's fair.
He's
yeah.
who you want.
He's like the Venom Hunter.
Yeah. Like, he just, it's like, because you can't target him if he's behind a piece of terrain. You're just like shooting Venom and you're like, haha, you're a size three. It's really hard to get to me.
Right. It's also, you can do it from a long ways away. Them mm-hmm. especially vulnerable to energy. You know, there's a lot of things going on that make it pretty good.
You could vortex Venom away a little bit if you needed to. So good.
So I'm curious what affiliations other than obviously Guardians of the Galaxy do you think that you will be seeing him in?
I think he's really good in Cabal, just because he's constantly attacking.
Right.
And he's so he's really good. So in Cabal and in Avengers, I feel like he's good for the same reasons. He's going to always be able, he's going to more often be able to proc booby traps, when someone does try to come up to his zone. I think it's really cool if he can booby trap two or three times in a game. And I think I'm less sold on him in Asgard because I don't think he survives hits very often. But on the other side, Asgard does really want energy attacks. Like, if there's a reason to get an energy attacker in Asgard, he's a really good one.
What do you think of, do you think that he will see play in, Wakanda at all?
I don't feel like he will. Just because he doesn't do anything that Wakanda needs. He has energy attacks and he can move people with Vortex. I could see him being good. Like, he likes the one rerolls. It makes it more likely you can proc Vortex. So, I could see it being usable. I just don't think it's not a character I would take. I would probably want, you know, a different two coster if I needed one.
Yeah.
Like, I would take Black Widow in Wakanda over him.
So, what sort of situations do we think that he especially excels in, or that he is weak in?
I think he's really good at most of the extracts, where he's grabbing something and then just trying to hold on to it. The one I thought that would be really bad, he doesn't want cosmic cube fragments.
Because yeah.
That's just gonna make it really bad.
For and I'm gone.
Him. Yeah. It's like, okay, I have a fragment, and it just makes it even more likely that he gets one-shotted, and
right.
I think it's bad. I do like him in actually all the other ones, that especially, I like him in hammers a lot. I think he's a really good hammer target.
Right, yeah.
Where he picks one up and he just doesn't let go of it and he shoots every turn. I do like him in the civilian one, Panic Grip mm-hmm. City. I think he's a really good target for that, just because sometimes he does have a lot of energy or a lot of power, so he might be able to evacuate.
I think you kind of touched on this already, but one situation that I think he kind of excels at is where he's kind of off on his own, not by other characters. He is, preferably there is an extract or a secure that is not the focus of the battle or what people are doing, and he's kind of over there scoring some points while trying to contribute some stuff from a long range with energy attacks. And like, if a lot of times if your opponent starts being tired of, you know, Rocket doing these things and he sends someone over, there's a good chance that he is dedicating more resources to dealing with Rocket than Rocket himself costs. And so, I guess those are kind of some situations or ways that I think that you can maybe try to take full advantage of Rocket.
Yeah, I really like the idea that your opponent's going to have to spend more resources getting him out than you are putting him there.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts before we move on to...
I think Rocket just is another reason I really like Guardians of the Galaxy, because you can make such a cheap Guardians team that includes these like big hitters like Thor and Ebony Maw. Just the idea that I can have, what, it's so easy to make 8-point Guardians and then just add in whoever else, you two other expensive guys to make a good list. Like, I'm really liking the idea of Rocket with Thor and Ebony Maw, because it's like, why would you attack Rocket when you have to deal with Thor and Ebony Maw?
Yeah, I think that he has a pretty cool place in rosters and in lineups, so I do like that. All right, well, let's move on and start talking about our comic book book club. So, do you want to go ahead and introduce this arc that we are talking about?
So last episode we did Annihilation, which was kind of the like introduction to the current Cosmic Marvel universe. And then so we're kind of reading a prelude to the sequel series. So Annihilation was so popular that they ramped up like right away to another Annihilation series, and this one they called Annihilation Conquest. And this is a prequel series to Annihilation Conquest called Annihilation Conquest Star-Lord. So after everything from Annihilation Conquest, Star-Lord, or Peter Quill, it still doesn't want to be Star-Lord. And we start off with a little backstory about how the reason Peter Quill has abandoned being a hero is because he basically sacrificed an entire colony of thousands of people to fight one of the Heralds of Galactus that had gone crazy. So he'd kind of made that, like, that, the trolley car question of, like, do you kill one person or a crowd of people? But instead it's, do I kill, like, tens of thousands of people, or do I let millions of people die? The beginning of the story basically shows Ronan the Accuser has, like, ordered his military to remove all the cybernetic implants and to have Peter Quill lead a team of prisoners to go and stop what they're calling a bomb, that will spread the Phalanx. So, quick backstory is the Phalanx is basically a technological, species that infects other people and species and, like, takes over. They will, like, mutate and make robotic bodies as well. But normally when comics show the Phalanx, it's like an infection. Like, you get infected with it and then you start to mutate into, like, a robot monster.
It felt a lot like a Marvel version of the Borg.
Yes, it's very Borgy. It happens automatically instead of you have to get kidnapped or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's even more sudden. But yes. And so, the team, because we're doing Rocket, this is the very first appearance of the, like, proto-Guardians of the Galaxy, where we see Peter Quill leading a team that has Rocket and Groot, as well as a human with the, is it the Omnipower? Captain Universe. So Captain Universe is not a singular superhero, it's like a superhero that is inhabited by this cosmic force. So, like, mm-hmm. Spider-Man was Captain Universe for one issue. Random people become Captain Universe when they need to be Captain Universe. And so, He's Captain Universe, and then we see Mantis, who we're all familiar with because of the movie. We see a Shi'ar Berserker, which if you watch the 90s X-Men cartoon, the Shi'ar are the species that like Professor X falls in love with their queen. We see a I forget his name, the bug guy. He's got like a his name has bug in it or something. But he's a Micronaut from a classic like 70s and 80s comic book series called The Micronauts. He's from a microscopic universe. So if you keep shrinking, you go to the microverse. And that's where he's from.
There you
go. So it's a weird team of alien people. But they're chosen because they don't need, technology to be, like, useful. And so they go in to this, they're basically, like, snuck into this moon colony of the Kree that the Phalanx have taken over and are using to make these bombs. And as they go, they're fighting these drone robots, and there's a lot of back and forth about the team and, like, you know, classic, like, new team adjusting to each other kind of stuff. At one point, Captain Universe kills the Shi'ar Berserker because she is dishonored by him saving her. And so the human kind of has, like, he's got, he's kind of shocked and he's having trouble dealing with this, but they keep going and infiltrating. And as they go, they find out that the bomb is actually, like, a virus that's infecting all of the Kree, and that they need to figure out the cure, and they need to figure out, like, how to stop it, because they can't just kill all the people. And I feel like for a second it was hinting that, like, maybe Star-Lord would have to do what he did before and kill everybody, but the team kind of gets captured, except for Mantis and Captain Universe. And then Mantis reveals she has the power to just hide and not be seen by these people. And so Mantis, which is,
and everyone else is like, oh, thank you for
helping
telling
us.
Telling this at this point.
Mantis is a really weird character. So one of the things about Mantis is that she says she's the Celestial Madonna, which means she will eventually give birth to, like, the savior of the universe. And it seems like she can tell the future, and she knows information she shouldn't. Like, she seems weird psychic. Like, she just knows things that she shouldn't. Which is really funny. Especially when she just, like, walks away while the team is getting captured. And she's like, I'm not gonna get captured right now, y'all. Okay, so the team is captured except for Mantis and Captain Universe. Captain Universe lets his cosmic force go so that he can, like, find the cure by infesting one of the Phalanx with Captain Universe. And then it, like, gets the cure, and then it goes back to the human. And then Mantis frees the team, and they, like, fight their way out. And so, like, basically they escape just barely with the cure. And at the end of the comic, it's kind of presented that they're going to be a team for the Kree from now on after earning their freedom by doing these heroic actions. And I like that it's kind of like the Kree are, we freed them, but we're forcing them to keep doing dangerous missions for us. So it's kind of odd that way. But this is, you know, this is basically the beginning of the Guardians of the Galaxy before they're called that.
Okay, well, so why do we end up picking this arc?
I picked it because if we're going to start with Rocket, I really don't want to start with some of Rocket's older comics. Rocket has been a comic character for 35 years before this part, and he had only been a guest character in most, and he's only shown up like 10 times. So he was this weird random character that popped in and out. And I just thought that if we were going to keep kind of following in this, we're also going to be reading more of the Annihilation Conquest comics because they're very appropriate for the Guardians characters. This was a really good, like, bridge that shows us the beginning of the Guardians of the Galaxy. It shows us the beginning of Rocket and Groot, you know, being a partnership. And it lets us see Rocket go from, I'm a cute, cuddly, woodland creature to, oh, wait, he's good with guns? And by the end of it, he's, like, reprogrammed the defense matrix on that Peter Quill made, and he's, like, jiggered their ship and escaped and saved everybody. So it's just, it's a really cool little, like, if this was your first time reading or learning about Rocket Raccoon and Groot, I think it's pretty dope, and it's, like, a pretty cool introduction to the characters.
Yeah, I would say so. It's interesting, I guess, anytime I get a chance to, you know, read a comic arc, and it's kind of an introduction to a character in the comics, and when they are different by a fair bit from the Marvel movies. And so Mantis and Groot are two that probably stood out the most to me that way, but it was an interesting comic book arc that I enjoyed.
Yeah. I want to share a little bit of so I was working at the comic book shop when they announced the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's a really bad idea. Nobody knows Guardians of the Galaxy.
Uh-huh.
It's not that great a selling comic. It's niche, right? Like, people liked it, but it wasn't nearly as popular as, like, the Civil War and the, you know, all the stuff that came after Civil War about the different Avengers teams. It didn't have that appeal, and I was like, that's a really weird choice. Why would they do Guardians of the Galaxy and not, you know, the 18 other Marvel properties that would have been more, that would have had more appeal? And then that trailer came out, and I was like, oh, that's really different from the comics, but that's a great idea. That's really fun looking. And, you know, I think all of us, right, the Guardians are now this very well-known team. But yeah, right, like, Groot is, like, really haughty because he's the, like, emperor of Planet X, and Rocket doesn't really look like the Rocket we're used to, and Mantis is basically the exact opposite of her movie counterpart.
Yeah.
Where she's, like, she's way too smart, she knows too much, she's hiding, she's, like, she is the most together member of the team. And she's incredibly dangerous, it looks like. Like, she karate kicks a robot and it blows up, and you're like, okay, so she's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually read several articles about, like, Disney's decision to go with the Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. And one of the things that was interesting with it was that it kind of seemed like they, and granted, this isn't written by Disney, so, you know, take it for what it is, I guess, but some outside analysis of it was basically that they kind of wanted to create something that was their own IP, almost, or intellectual property, that could, I guess, kind of take root and be a tentpole for them, and one of the things that's, so, another example of how this is advantageous to them is, you know, previously in Disneyland, there was a ride, the Tower of Terror, and that wasn't something that was owned by Disney, as far as that intellectual property, and it was a great ride, it was one of my favorite rides, but they had to pay, like, a licensing fee that was, like, a lot of money, to operate this ride.
Yeah.
And so when they announced that they were going to change that ride in Disneyland to a Guardians of the Galaxy ride, I was like, oh, I don't think I like this idea because this is one of my favorite rides and the odds that they're going to mess this up is really high. And this is like a super well themed ride that's basically perfect. And so why are they messing with perfection? Then they did the reskin, and, you know, hats off to Disney. It's an even better ride, and now they're not having to pay a licensing fee on it, and so they're happy about that, I'm sure. Go ahead.
No, I had the exact same thought. Like, the Tower of Terror is fantastic. Why fix what's broken? But
yeah.
I haven't been on it yet, but I'll take your word for it.
Oh my heavens, yeah. They did an amazing job with it. And real quick, one thing that's kind of fun with it. So the theme of it is that the Collector has captured all of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And you go into the ride, and there is an animatronic rocket who starts talking to you, and he tells you his plan to bust out the rest of the guys. And the plan is that, you know, he's gonna, if humans raise up their hands at doors, then you as the rider, you're supposed to be going on a tour of the Collector's collection. And so he's gonna have you raise your hands, and that'll gain you access into, the rooms. And so while you're doing this distraction and gaining access and stuff, he's gonna break out the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you guys are gonna escape. And so, you know, A, on the one hand, it has kind of this fun little tie-in about raise your hand while you're doing the ride, which is kind of fun. The music of it is really cool because it's basically like the groovy, you know, music from Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a little bit longer than, Tower of Terror was. And they have projection stuff where There's multiple different songs you can hear, and then there's multiple different scenes that you can see as you're doing the ride, and so it has good rewritability. And then one last thing that's kind of cool, if you go during Halloween season, if you ride the ride at night, they do a variant of the ride where there's basically like a time skip, and where you've gone in, you've broke everyone out, but on accident, Groot got left behind, and so you have to break back in and get Groot, except this time, there's already been one breakout, and so everything's like on lockdown, and there's all these sirens going and stuff like that, and the music, that plays during it, instead of like this groovy Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, is like a lot harder, like heavy metal type music, and so, it's kind of cool that they have like this, all these different things that they do with the ride. So
that's awesome. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And someday, we'll be able to go back to gatherings and do stuff like that. So that'll be fun too. So do you have any comments on the creative team of this comic book arc?
Not really. It was kind of, like, the artist I've never heard of, and then, oh dear, can you remind me of the writer? I don't remember which one. Was it Dan Abnett?
Okay. Abnett did, like, the Inquisitor books for Games Workshop.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Dan Abnett wrote most of Annihilation Conquest. Like, just off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure Dan Abnett wrote every side story as well, because they were, it was a very, like, tightly controlled storyline.
Uh-huh.
I need to double check. Oh, no, it's Keith Giffen. So then, Keith Giffen is we've talked about him before, actually, because I think he did write the Annihilation story. So, this is just, to me, I feel like it's the perfect sequel to the last arc we did, to finish up showing how, like, where is Star-Lord, and I like the idea that he has to take up the mantle again, so I feel like it does follow Annihilation really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, like what I said last week, Keith Giffen's he's written a lot of spacey stuff, and I think that's his niche, and he's pretty good at it. I like it.
Nice. Alright, well, maybe we can go ahead and pause there, and we can continue our discussion of the comics and and Rocket's in-game abilities in the bonus episode. So, thank you everyone for listening, and please, if you're interested, take a chance to check out our Patreon page and see different ways that you can support us, and if you back us, you can gain access to our bonus episode and listen to that as well. So, Greg, do you want to thank everyone for supporting us on Patreon?
Everyone, thank you so much. We really couldn't do this without you. And to all of our Patreon supporters, Is it weirder if I ride on your shoulder or you ride on my shoulder? I'm a small guy. I probably couldn't carry most of y'all on my shoulders, so it'll have to be the other way around.